neighbor's ass, 'cause my neighbor has a real nice ass. My ass was once strong as an ox. People could easily ride it from dawn until dusk, and it never once balked at a plow. It was hardy and handsome, but I'm afraid now a disaster. I've had to put my ass out to pasture. I should be happy with the ass that God gave me. To look a gift ass in the mouth is a sin. I really should look on the bright side. It's such a big job, breaking a brand new ass in. I know that envy is wrong, but my ass is just pathetic while his is so strong. In the old days, my ass bought me kudos and fame. Now my ass just brings me shame. Oh Lord, Lord, my Savior, forgive my behavior. I can't help but covet the ass of my neighbor. I want my neighbor's ass, 'cause my neighbor has a real nice ass. All together. I want my neighbor's ass, 'cause my neighbor has a real nice ass. Keep it going, yeah. I want my neighbor's ass, 'cause my neighbor has a real nice ass. Da-da-da-da-da. I want my neighbor's ass, 'cause my neighbor has a real nice ass.
And the sin tackled next week is sloth, which I really like laziness, frankly. There's too many people doing stuff all the time. They get out, they start rushing around doing stuff. I'm a lazy man at heart. I'm so lazy I can hardly really even be bothered to end this bit of the comedy club, which is finished now. And I'm really, even this sentence, I'm just too lazy.
Enter the seventh dimension. BBC Radio 4 Extra.
I'm Andrew O'Neill, half man, half insect. Half man, a whole man. I've just swallowed half a fly, accidentally. I was on my bike and it just flew in. I got the rest out, but I'm worried it means I'm not vegan anymore. Also, I'm a little bit worried about what would happen if I used a teleport machine. Perhaps I'll die. Tonight, we have a story of rarefied society in a utopian future world. And of course, this wouldn't be the seventh dimension if there weren't sinister goings-on. And so, starring Derek Jacobi, who I've met, actually, got his autograph and everything, and a certain seventh dimension presenter by the name of Toby Haydock, adapted from the novel by Herman Hesse, this is part one of The Glass Bead Game.
The Glass Bead Game by Hermann Hesse. Dramatised by Lavinia Greenlaw.
The controversy over whether Joseph Kinect had been a bold militant committed to his ideals or the worst kind of traitor divided the province of Castalia for many years. It is a debate that has still not entirely subsided. The story of his life, which we shall attempt to trace here, has drifted off into legend, just as he, having achieved the highest possible position, that of Magister Ludi, Master of the Games, moved beyond it into a realm we cannot understand, whose nature we can only guess at. It is true that Connect's life ended in tragedy, but tragedy is inherent in every life consecrated to thought. What has tempted us to delve so deeply into his personality, a human aspect on which we Castalians place little importance, is the serenity with which he pursued his destiny to its inexorable conclusion. We know nothing of Joseph Connect's origins. He either lost his parents early or was removed by the authorities from an unfavourable setting. Among the documentation we have gathered, we have found only one significant event from his early years. Connect would have been 12 or 13, a scholarship pupil at the Latin school. One day, the music master, a member of the highest board of educators, came to visit.
Connect, stay behind. I have a message for you.
Yes, sir.
You may have heard that the music master is paying our school a visit today.
It was announced this morning, sir.
Well, you have been sent for. Do you understand?
No, not really, sir.
It is a great honour, Knecht. It might come to nothing, but it's a great honour all the same. I can't remember the last time a boy was sent for. Let me see, it must have been... was it? Well, Connect, what are you standing around like that for?
Sorry, sir.
You are to present yourself to the music master immediately.
You are Joseph Connect?
Yes, sir.
You have your violin? Good. I want you to play from memory, something easy you know by heart. You can't think of anything.
No.
How about this? You probably sang it as a child.
Connect was already forgetting what it was to have been a child, but this song was something he remembered as soon as he started to play.
Amazing.
I'm pleased you enjoy making music. It's the best way to become friends. And I hope you and I shall be friends, Joseph. Once more.
They played the song many times, every repetition enriched with embellishments and variations that wove around one another in delightful figurations.
And how did you find Joseph Connect, Master? His Latin is excellent, and his violin teacher has remarked on the delicacy of his fingering, and you know that we almost never recommend a pupil to you. Hardly ever at all. If anything, we are excessively stringent.
Never mind his Latin reports. I see enough diligent young men. What interests me is his nature. Does he have what it takes to become a musician in the purest sense?
I believe he might. I remember the day he arrived, how very young he looked, and yet how immediately he adapted to being here. Many boys miss their home life terribly, but he... May I ask, what have you decided?
He is modest and unspoiled. I have decided to enter his name on the list as worthy of admission.
Worthy of admission? What an honour, Master. A great honour. So you think he is perhaps capable of becoming a player of the game?
He is the kind of person we want to develop.
And a most promising young musician.
Indeed. But the game requires someone who could exchange his discipline, be it music or physics or Greek, at any time for any other, without losing his head.
A good player is a rare creature, then.
Rare indeed.
We might say something here about the glass bead game. At first, it was nothing more than a way of developing memory and ingenuity. A music teacher constructed a frame strung with glass beads of various sizes and colours with which he laid out themes, transpositions and variations. The students liked it and started to challenge one another to do the same in mathematics, physics and so on, translating the symbols of each into glass beads. Out of that has grown a game that is the most complete possible expression of science, the arts, language, philosophy. It goes without saying that it has long ceased to have anything to do with actual glass beads. Those who attended the same secondary school as Joseph Connect remember him as a friendly, if rather contained, young man. He was said to be, let me see, generally quite merry, but without a trace of boisterousness. Not terribly excitable, except when playing music. Sometimes anxious, good at games. But what struck his contemporaries most was his extreme reaction every time a boy was sent home.
They keep going on and on about how Oscar's failed and how pathetic he is. On and on. And he's got to stay there all night, then go tomorrow, not knowing anything. He might as well be dead.
What Joseph most looked forward to was the time he spent with the music master.
Today, Joseph, I thought we should construct a canon, and I want us to start by constructing a very bad one.
The time came for the boys in Joseph's year to graduate. On his final day, among all these ceremonies and festivities, he was summoned by the principal and told that he was one of only 12 chosen to go on to the schools where the finest players of the glass bead game, known as the elite, were trained and taught.
So you have received the news, Joseph. Good, good.
Yes, thank you. It's a great honour. Really, I'm very...
Very what, Joseph?
Master, can I ask you something?
Of course, you are free to ask me anything.
The thing is, the principal told us how things are outside of Castalia, in the ordinary schools. He said people there study for the free professions, and I wanted to know, why are they called free, and why are we Castalians forbidden them?
When non-Castalians speak of the free professions, it can all sound very inspiring. But when we use the phrase, we do so ironically. Their only freedom is to choose their profession, which anyway is often chosen for them. For the elite student, it is the reverse. He does not choose a profession, but beyond the basic courses, he has the greatest possible imaginable freedom.
I see. And where am I to go next? Which of the schools?
Patience. As you know, you will be told only a few days before you depart. It is the tradition.
Of course. And thank you, Master. I did not mean to question things. It's just that sometimes it seems that everything can be interpreted one way and then in the opposite way. Sometimes I can't be absolutely sure of what is true.
There is truth, but it is lived, not taught. And try to remember that Castalia is a place where every brick derives its meaning only from its place in the whole. There is no path out. And he who climbs higher does not acquire more freedom, only more and more responsibility. Be prepared for inner conflict, Josef Knecht. I can see it has already begun.
Knecht had been assigned to Waldseel, the school he had hoped for, and the place renowned for producing the most skilled players of the glass bead game. He arrived on foot along an avenue of linden trees that led to the former monastery which housed the school. Joseph spent much of his time at Waldseel alone and read a great deal. Hegel, Leibniz, Kant. His marks did not improve, but it has to be remembered that he was an adolescent. No doubt, enduring the trials of bodily change and confusing attractions, he was, after all, 17. One day, Joseph came across someone who would draw him out of his shell.
This place is simply unnatural. Castalia teaches you nothing about life. It has no life.
Who's the boy making all the noise?
Don't you know, Joseph? That's Plinio De Signori.
I haven't seen him before.
He turned up a few weeks ago.
You should all live in the real world, not in this hothouse of arrogant scholastic intellectuality.
Go on, then.
Look at me. An outsider allowed to partake of your great education.
Only because of your family connections and family money. Yeah.
Indeed. Well, I'm not ashamed of that. But you should be grateful that I'm here, bringing a breath of fresh air, an experience of real life.
And what is more real about the so-called real life?
Ah, now there's an interesting question. Now let us consider the notion of real life.
Don't start pretending to be philosophical, De Signori. Yeah. For your fine talk, what are you going to do to change the world? Well, get married and take a job in Daddy's family firm.
Plinio De Signori was a handsome, fiery, and well-spoken young man. He was from the world. Someone with a father and mother, uncles, aunts, brothers, and sisters. And one for whom Castalia, with all its rules and traditions, was just a step on the road. He was one of the rare guest pupils admitted by the board, and he was attracting a great deal of attention with his shocking attacks on everything held sacred in Castalia.
The glass bead game is sheer irresponsible playing around with the arts and sciences. It's just a game, a series of gestures. Nothing is created out of it. You analyze every single style and period of music, but produce no new music yourselves. You read and exposit Pindar and Goethe, but are ashamed to write poetry. And as for your teachers, well, they behave like high priests, lording it over you lot.
Oh, and what's wrong with us lot? Yes.
You are nothing more than a bunch of spoon-fed eunuchs.
So you think we are passive and castrated?
I do. And to get back to my point, if you attempt to construct a life out of such an education, it too will be passive and castrated.
He has a point. We make no music, write no poetry, produce nothing, engender nothing, question nothing, but
it is this little place, Castalia, that gives your great outside world its teachers, its methods and books.
Yeah! Yeah!
Plinio was curious. Who was this fair, finely wrought boy to whom his words seemed to mean so much? He decided to make him a friend.
Ah, it's my interrogator.
Oh, hardly.
We haven't been properly introduced, have we? I'm Plinio De Signori.
Josef Knecht.
You look worried, Knecht. Do I have a convert? Come and see me this afternoon, and I'll persuade you of all the evils of Castalia.
No, I have to... You see, it's impossible. Quite impossible. Goodbye.
Plinio refused to be rebuffed. As for Josef, he was troubled enough to turn to the music master for advice.
To be perfectly frank with you, dear master, there is something in Plinio's point of view which I cannot contradict. He appeals to a voice within me, the voice of my nature, perhaps, as opposed to the voice of my education. If I found myself agreeing with him, my life in Castalia would be over, and what then? I have no parents, no friends in the outside world, no one to return to.
The music master's response was surprising and exact.
Accept this boy's friendship. Expose yourself to his attacks. But remember that I charge you here with the defense of Castalia. Counter his arguments with all your knowledge and skill.
And so the debates between the two opponents became famous at the school.
Ha! That proves it. While you know all about the outside world, you do not know a great deal about Castalia.
If you would give me a moment to reconsider my point...
By all means.
There was something you quoted the other day. A clause from the Statute of Principles.
I believe you mean the regulations on pedagogical practice at elementary level.
Yes, that was it. But I'll need to consult. I'll come back to you on that, if I may.
Of course, we're not in any hurry here, are we?
Their constant engagement led to a close friendship. And when Plinio disappeared off for the holidays, Josef felt drawn more than ever to that other, outside world. He was always delighted when Plinio returned, and eager to hear of his adventures.
I tell you, Josef, she stopped playing it so cool when I managed to get us into the Cat's Whiskers.
The Cat's what?
Whiskers. It's a nightclub. The nightclub, actually. Terribly chic and terribly select. The perfect evening out after putting up with my mother's fussing, and my father wanting to trot me round to show all his friends how I've grown. He's furious, by the way, because I insisted on going to all three party meetings. And we had a massive argument about poorhouse and welfare reform.
Party meetings?
Political parties. The election. You really do live in a bubble, don't you? So what did you do with your holidays?
Not much.
Well, you must have done something.
Well, I hiked in the forest, went swimming, practiced Froberger's fugues.
And?
Well, read Hegel.
Froberger. Hegel. Where is the fun in your life? Come to think of it, where's the life?
Well, and I wrote some poems.
You committed an artistic act? But that's practically treason here in Castalia. And poetry, the most dangerous pursuit of all. Is my influence finally taking hold, Joseph? Are you starting to rebel?
Actually, there was something. Something happened. Mm-hmm. Well, what I mean is it didn't happen. Not really.
You mean a girl? I can tell. You've gone bright red, Joseph.
She well, Clara, the daughter of one of the chess tutors.
I know Clara. Yeah, she's that pretty little redhead, the one that's always in the coffee house with her nose in a book.
We met in the lane. She smiled at me.
And?
And we talked a little.
And then?
I saw her again.
Where?
At dusk, along the river.
You were alone with her?
I was alone with her. But I didn't... I couldn't. And anyway, what's the point? It's not as if I'm going to marry her. If I enter the order, I'm not allowed to marry anyone.
No wonder Castalia places so much importance on the practice of meditation.
I think she likes me.
Oh, I'm sure she does.
But it wouldn't be fair, would it, to lead her on?
Joseph, haven't you noticed? The young men and women of Castalia have come to an understanding. Look, she knows you're not going to marry her, but she doesn't mind because it's nothing personal. You can't marry and that's that.
But don't all girls want to get married?
Yes, and they will eventually. But meanwhile, they can enjoy a dalliance with a clever, sensitive boy like you. You know, we scholars have the reputation of being excellent lovers. Such imagination.
For all that Plinio attacked Castalia, Joseph knew that this was where he belonged. A life without family, romance, amusement, newspapers, nightclubs, or votes, but also a life without hunger or danger or dreary labour.
Just a bunch of perpetual children in a tightly fenced playground where every nose is carefully wiped and every dangerous thought or actual emotion carefully contained. It's a nice, safe, bloodless game, artificial and sterilised...
Enough! You've won already.
I almost had you convinced, didn't I? Go on, admit it.
It's true. There was a moment where I very nearly agreed with you.
Joseph, now I've known for a long time that you are not the Castalian saint and utterly believing glass bead game player whose part you've been acting so splendidly.
I see.
But even though you have your doubts, you've argued so strongly in favour of this uptight little province that I have become secretly infatuated with it all. So much so that I actually asked my father if I might remain in Castalia and enter the order.
You did? Well, what did he say?
He said yes.
That's wonderful! To think that you understand, that you believe. Oh, Plinio, it's wonderful! We shall share this life and be brothers and...
Now, don't get too excited. Look, it's true, my father agreed, and I thought about it. I really did. And the 7 years I've spent arguing with you have been worth more than anything. But the thing is, for me to stay here would be to escape. A fine and noble escape, but an escape nonetheless. I have to leave, Joseph. I'm going at the end of this term.
But what will you do? What will you be?
I don't know. A man of the world. Of the outside world.
What about everything you've learned?
I will always be grateful to Castalia and to you, dear Joseph. Now, there's one other thing. My father wrote to the headmaster, inviting you to come and stay with us this coming holiday.
Come to stay? But that's not permitted. To go outside the province would be... But the headmaster would never agree.
Nor did he. But apparently, as it came from so highly esteemed a family, blah, 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 the headmaster took it to a committee of the Board of Educators.
And?
Well, what do you expect? They turned it down flat.
Plinio was leaving Castalia. As the friends parted, he promised that another invitation would come.
I can see a great future for you. Scaling the highest of the Castalian heights.
By the time I've climbed the lowest rung, you'll already be president of something or mayor of wherever.
I should hope so.
They shook hands and Plinio boarded his train. More invitations did indeed follow, and one day Joseph would be in a position to decide on them for himself. Meanwhile, he had another year at Valsell to get through, and without Plinio to distract him, devoted his free time to the glass bead game, where he quickly developed a reputation as a most promising young player. Joseph Knecht was now 24. His school days were over, and he was about to begin what are known as the years of freedom, the time when young men like him make their first ventures towards the infinite horizons of the mind. There were certain dangers, as there are anywhere, but in Castalia, a student was not going to become a drinker, or join a secret society, or throw himself away on a woman. These were probably the happiest and most serene years of Joseph's life.
Pay attention! You've been assigned to groups in which to work on sketches for games. I will give you suggestions for themes, perhaps addressing the delicate transition from astronomy, mathematics and physics to language and music. But beware, I will set traps too. I will lure you onto the thin ice of impermissible abstractions and tautologies. But you, Knecht, you will work with Tegularius.
Hello, I'm Fritz. Fritz Tegularius, and you're Knecht, aren't you? Yeah, I'm glad to be working with you. They say you're pretty good when you can be bothered to play.
Fritz Tegularius? You work in the game archives, don't you? Yeah. I'm Joseph. Now, where shall we start?
Now, I had a thought about those Greek quantities.
Well, perhaps we should focus on the question of linguistic history in this context.
Yeah, but that would force us to acknowledge that a semiotic reading...
It would also provide us with a bridge into the question of cadence.
Now, there's an idea. But, and let's not let our esteemed leader catch us out with his slippery interventions on phonemes.
The two worked quickly and happily together.
But that's it. That's it.
What's it?
Growth and decay. Just then, when we were talking, I saw it in my mind, how language is like some vast ancient organism evolving and extending.
We knew that.
But what next? It reaches its peak, and so inevitably it will start to totter and droop and sink into decay.
But inevitably? Now, can we get on with the game?
Don't you see, Fritz? All languages decay and eventually disappear.
Well, probably so, but it all sounds a bit gloomy.
Not at all. That's the point. Everything, every phase and aspect of their existence can be retrieved through the game. It's what the game can do, what it's for.
Indeed, it goes without saying. Now, can we get on?
Knecht found a great friend in this gifted and awkward young man. Fritz Tegularius was a born glass bead game player, a natural Castalian, happily untroubled by the questions that preyed on Joseph. Now, though, he refused to be distracted and buried himself in his studies. 2 years passed before he chose to tell anyone what he was working on.
I'm going to let you in on something, Fritz. People might wonder what I do with my time.
It does seem to be some kind of terrible secret.
I realise that, but I want to explain, only to you, though, no one else.
So, explain.
Well, do you remember that game? The one we drew up together when we first met.
Of course, the pedals of language.
That's what I'm studying.
That game. That single game.
From start to finish. I'm working through each of its phases, translating it back from the language of the game into its original forms.
But what we refined into a 15-minute game pattern would take years to unpack. That there's fugue and sonata form, mathematics, Froberger and Scarlatti, and Chinese. You'll have to learn Chinese, for God's sake.
I just want once in my life to have studied and reconstructed the entire content of a game.
I see.
And I must ask for your help. As you work in the archives, I wondered if you could find the symbols for some of the themes.
It's a crazy idea. Brilliantly crazy. Of course I'll help.
Joseph continued his work and was drawn more and more deeply into the game.
Dear Master, perhaps one can be an excellent player without really grasping the inner mystery of the game, but I want to come as close to its innermost meaning as I can.
This is all very well, Joseph, but I never try to teach my students the meaning of music, although I do make a point of getting them to count their eighths and sixteenths nicely. Whatever you become, teacher, scholar, or musician, have respect for meaning, but do not imagine that it can be taught.
Joseph continued his studies. He took part in the advanced courses in the game each year, and soon came to be regarded with interest and admiration by the Vicus Lusorum, the playing elite to which he found he now belonged. The game was revealing more and more of its complexities and possibilities, and yet he still faced that old tormenting question. Was it not in the end just a game? And if it were just a game, what did that make Castalia?
Well, Joseph, you are officially a leading light.
Don't be silly, Fritz. Anyway, leading light of what?
Oh, come on. You know what it's like round here. Everyone's so muted, so polished. They creep about the place observing one another. Well, there's been an unusual amount of talk recently, and it's all about you.
Are you remembering, Fritz, that you are one of these muted and polished people?
Oh, yes. I am indeed part of the very flowering of the traditions of Castalia, the cream of the intellectual crop, the one young boys dream of becoming.
And as a player, you are also, according to some, haughty and idle. Brilliant, yes, but utterly spoiled and lacking all feeling for life.
It's taking it a bit far.
Well, it's not my view, of course, but it is the view of some.
Well, at least it's not yours. But you are with us, aren't you, Joseph? The flowering, the cream, etc. Don't you want to know what they said?
Whether another player offers a compliment or sniggers behind my back is of no interest. None at all.
None at all? Well, you rise above, like the cream.
No, I just can see now that it's not necessarily the best or only way to live. There are other ways.
Kinect! Joseph Kinect! It is you, isn't it?
Were it not for his voice, Joseph wouldn't have recognized the tall young man with the trim beard bounding towards him.
Plinio! How are you?
Joseph! Well.
Let me introduce you to Fritz Tegularius Plinio de Signori.
Pleased to meet you.
Yes. Well, must get back to work.
So, Joseph, well, how have you been? I heard you'd gone south to stay in a temple and had quite given up hope that we might meet while I'm here.
And why are you here?
Oh, you know, a guest course in the game. The kind of thing laid on for us amateurs.
Yes.
So,
it's good to see you, Plinio. It must be, what?
10 years.
10 years? Yes.
But listen, why not join me for dinner this evening, if you're free?
Dinner? All right then. Why not?
Good Lord, Joseph. You're only having soup and rice and you've hardly touched them. You really are some kind of monk, aren't you?
I wouldn't describe myself as such.
Well, of course not, no. So, tell me about this peculiar new fashion among the players.
I'm not interested in fashion.
I only meant that...
There's so much superficial nonsense talked by people who do not and cannot understand.
Oh, and I'd be one of them, wouldn't I? Playing the game?
No. Yes. Let's not talk about that. Tell me about yourself. How are your studies?
My studies? I'm 36 years old. I completed my studies some years ago.
Of course you did. But what are you doing now?
I'm a government official. I sit on the committee of... it's all too mundane.
No, it isn't. I want to know. Tell me about your life. Please.
Well, let me see. I get out of bed and I go to work.
Well, that's it. Tell me about it.
The getting out of bed or the going to work?
All of it. Tell me about life, the world, about it all.
Well, the most interesting part of my job is the travel.
Where have you been?
Most recently, England.
England? You didn't by any chance happen to see the Perigoni Astrolabe held in the Georgian archive?
It rained and the food was terrible.
The evening was not a success. The distance between the two was too great. And both were disappointed. The conversation moved on to politics, and Plinio issued a warning.
Listen, Joseph, we're entering a time of great unrest. War is a real possibility, and if that happens, then your whole existence, your precious Castalia, will be threatened.
And if it were, what would you do, Plinio? Would you be for us or against?
It's not likely that I would be asked to give a view. But of course I would be in favour of leaving Castalia in peace, as far as possible. Although it has to be said that you cost the country a tidy sum year on year.
So I gather. About a tenth of the money spent on armaments each year during the Century of Wars.
Well, that may be so, but I think you should face the fact that things are going to change.
Things always change. It is the nature of things to do so.
And a perfect argument makes everything all right, does it?
Sometimes, yes.
God, you've become so considered, Joseph. Now, I need a cognac and a good cigar. And I have no doubt that you will decline to join me.
Good night, Plinio.
Yeah. Good night.
Shortly after this, Joseph received a summons. It was from Thomas van der Trave, the Magister Ludi himself. The Magister received Joseph at his home, in his everyday clothes.
Ah, there you are. Joseph Knecht. Come in, come in.
Magister, it is a great...
Yes, yes. Now come through here. There is something I want you to have a look at. These are proposals which we, the Directorate of the Game, have to examine. Most are suggestions for material to be admitted to the archive. There is, for instance, here a study of the history of the madrigal, quite meticulous, in which its author has chanced upon a curve evident in the stylistic development of the form that he has expressed in both musical and mathematical terms.
Fascinating.
Or here we have an examination of the rhythmic structure of Julius Caesar's Latin, in which has been located the most striking congruences with the results of well-known studies of the intervals in Byzantine hymns.
Well, if I may say so, I'm reasonably familiar
with... And here a comparison of the horoscopes of Goethe and Spinoza with such pretty and colourful drawings attached.
Indeed.
If you could come for maybe half an hour each day for a week or so?
Yes, of course, it would
good, be... Good, good. Let's get started. Read the synopsis and present me with the central thesis.
The half hour passed swiftly, and for 2 weeks, Joseph came each day to the Magister Ludi's house. He quickly realized that he was being asked to bring his attention to bear on ideas that were worthless. Was he simply there to take the load of such trivial paperwork off the Magister's shoulders? Or was this, however delicately contrived, some kind of test?
Very well, Knecht. There is no need for you to come tomorrow.
Oh.
Our collaboration, for which I thank you, is at an end for now.
I see. Well, thank you, Magister. Thank you very much.
And, by the way, in my view, you should apply now.
Apply?
For admission to the Order. There won't be any difficulty. I've already let the heads of the Order know.
You think I'm ready to join the Order?
I do. But may I say, you are still young and must not be tempted to philosophize our game, as young players are inclined to do. It is neither philosophy nor religion, but a discipline in its own right, of a character closest, I would say, to an art. The philosopher Kant, little known today but a formidable thinker, once said that theological philosophizing was a magic lantern of chimera. We must not make our glass bead game into that.
Like all students at his level, Joseph knew the rules and that he was entitled to choose who would perform the ceremony of his admission. He asked that it be done by the music master and was given a few days' leave to go and see him.
You have come just in time, Joseph. I am about to resign my office. My release has already been granted.
Your release, master?
Yes. But you have not come all this way to discuss that. Let us take tea and I'll go through the details of the ceremony. It is to be performed tomorrow and is really quite simple. Now, do you remember the paragraph from the statutes I set you as a meditation exercise some years ago?
Know this. Every step upward on the ladder of offices is not a step into freedom, but into bondage. The higher the office, the tighter the bondage. The greater the power of the office, the stricter the service.
Come, Joseph. Before you leave, stay with me a while.
With pleasure. I would like to ask, if I may, why it is you are resigning.
Come now. Don't look so sad. You are like a son to me, stepping into my place. And it is what I want. I am so very tired.
When Joseph returned to Balzo, the Magister Ludi summoned him once more. This time, he spoke to him as a colleague.
All that's needed now, Joseph, is for you to be given a place, an assignment, a proper role in our organization.
Oh, I had thought, well, you see, I'd be perfectly happy with whatever modest role you want to give me.
Why only modest role?
I suppose I was hoping I could have a while longer for my studies.
You were you? And how long did you have in mind?
I didn't mean, of course...
As I thought, you're still thinking and talking like a student. When and if you attain high office, you can apply for leave to study, if you can persuade the authorities of the value of your research. So set those thoughts aside for now and pay attention. The Benedictine Monastery of Mariafels is one of the oldest centers of learning in the country, and always a friend to Castalia, has asked us to send someone from the order who would give some introductory courses in the game.
I'd be honored, Master, to serve the order in this way, and to see more of the country. When will I leave?
Tomorrow. But first, you need to be made aware of the context of your visit. You know the province's history, how it came into being at the end of the Age of Wars, when what was needed was the restoration of reason, order, and law. And of course, we are a pedagogical order, and so have nothing to do with politics. Nonetheless, underlying Castalia are some hidden, complex problems buried in its political foundations. You will be staying a while in the Abbey, among the fathers, and will probably hear a little political talk. If you would simply inform me from time to time of such matters, I would be grateful.
Inform you?
Please understand that I am not asking you to be a spy or to pass on anything that goes against your conscience. In any case, what could we do with such information? We are not real politicians and have no real power.
It's always been like this. Being chosen, followed, listened to, picked out, tested. I've been passed from one teacher to the next, and they all expect me to keep moving higher. And I will, won't I? No one's going to let me settle for anything less.
But why was it that Joseph realized this so late and so reluctantly? Because he had not sought it at all, and he did not want it. Joseph arrived at the massive, ancient monastery high in the mountains. He savored the simple comfort of his rooms, the peace of the cloisters, and the fine little city-state beyond the walls of barns and vineyards, cobblers and tailors, cattle and sheep. He was even invited to play the famous organ. There was a kind of venerable slowness to the place, which Joseph observed and admired, and eventually submitted to. Meanwhile, he spent a great deal of time in the library, roaming freely among the shelves, except in a corner where a table had been laid out for one of the monks. Although the library was full of priceless books, he seemed to be the only scholar at serious work. This was Father Jacobus. After some months, he approached Joseph and spoke to him.
You will find in me neither a specialist on the history of Castalia nor a player of the glass bead game. But since our two orders are forming ever closer ties of friendship, I would be happy to take personal advantage now and then of your presence among us.
The old man's skillful blend of ceremony and mockery was familiar to Joseph from his studies in Chinese. With gratitude and pleasure, he accepted Father Jacobus's invitation to call on him that evening.
Father Jacobus?
Come in! Come in!
They talked about Purcell and Handel, and Joseph asked to be told more about the Benedictine order. And what might he, in turn, tell Father Jacobus of Castalia?
Frankly, I have never been interested in Castalia, which I feel to be a blasphemous imitation of a Christian order. No God, or church, or religion.
That's as maybe, but from a Castalian perspective...
The conversation grew lively and touched on 100 questions. The two started to spend part of each day in conversation, and Joseph came to realize how much he had to learn from this eminent historian. Meanwhile, the Magister Ludi himself wrote to reassure Joseph and to offer further guidance.
We, the Order, have to consider the possibility of future threats to our province. We have to build bridges and to forge bonds in order to protect ourselves. In short, we intend to establish a permanent representative of Castalia at the Holy See in Rome. The time has come to bridge the ancient gulf between the Church and our order. The Catholic Church is a power that has withstood all kinds of shocks for centuries. We need to convince it of our importance, of how much we depend upon one another.
You mathematicians and glass bead game players have distilled a kind of world history to suit your taste. It consists of nothing but ideas and art. You know all about the decay of Latin syntax in the second century, but not a thing about Jesus Christ or Alexander. Nothing exists for you but laws and formulae. No good or evil, no yesterday or tomorrow, nothing but an eternal mathematical present.
But how is one to study history without attempting to bring order to it?
How old are you, Knecht?
35, Father.
And no real sense of history. To study history means submitting to chaos and nevertheless retaining faith in order and meaning. It is a very serious task, young man. And possibly a tragic one.
After some 2 years, Joseph had adapted to life in the monastery. He helped the organist revive the singing of motets, made several important finds in the music archives, and trained a small beginner's class in the glass bead game. What pleased him most was that he gradually brought Father Jacobus to speak of Castalia with tolerance and even respect. This he held a personal triumph. And then another letter arrived from the Magister Ludi.
I understand you have become acquainted with Father Jacobus. He is, as I am sure you realize, a leading light of contemporary Catholic thinking. If he comes to think well of Castalia, if you can persuade him to support our endeavor, then the security of Castalia is secured. This is your assignment. I hope you will agree to it.
Joseph was deeply troubled to think that his conversations with Father Jacobus would now be seen to have an ulterior motive. He was also disturbed by a note he received from the music master.
I hear you have become some sort of diplomat. Not a pleasant occupation, but it seems our people are happy with you. If, though, it is not the career for you, then be on your guard against it. I think they want to capture you for it. And please do not ask me any questions. I will say no more.
Joseph thought hard about how to broach the subject of Rome. In the end, Father Jacobus anticipated him.
You try to exalt this game into a sacrament, but sacraments do not arise this way. The game is still a game.
You mean, Reverend Father, that we lack theology?
I would say that the concept of theology is so remote from Castalian thought that it might be impossible for us to discuss.
I see, then perhaps...
It's late, my friend.
Oh, of course. I'll leave you to rest.
Just before you go, there was one other thing. You know, Joseph, I greatly enjoy our talks. Your energy and brilliance are as good as a cure for old age.
I'm pleased to hear it.
But it would be as well for us to keep things clear.
I'm sorry?
I'm not sure how those who have sent you here will benefit from our conversations. To be frank, you didn't seem entirely sure why you were here when you arrived, but now you have a sense of purpose. Am I correct?
Well,
I thought as much. I have also concluded that your assignment concerns not the glass bead game or the monastery, but me. Am I correct in that also? I'm afraid not much of your secret is left. I would like to suggest that we make things entirely transparent. So, tell me, Josef Knecht, what is your mission here?
Forgive me. I'm so ashamed that you have had to speak first. I will tell you exactly what they have charged me with.
A Castalian presence in Rome. I see. Well, Josef, I'll give serious consideration to this proposal. My decision will depend on how well you can persuade me of Castalia's intentions and ideals. But observe, please, a little lesson in diplomacy. I seized the initiative because I had lost it. You knew more than I. Now, the balance has been restored.
Another year passed. And while Josef was content to remain at the monastery and to learn all he could from the father, he also knew he had to keep up with the glass bead game. He listened on the radio to lectures and seminars and games. His conversations with Father Jacobus continued to be friendly, although there was to be another surprise.
Have you heard anything recently about your friend, Plinio De Signori?
Plinio? How do you... I don't understand.
Oh, Mr. De Signori is well known to us. He has written a polemic attacking the church and attacking me in particular.
Why would he attack you?
Oh, I suppose I am seen in some circles as a figure of influence or authority. The point is, I asked for information about him and was told that he had gone to school in Castalia and that he had become close to you.
It's true. We were friends.
Then I hope not all your friends are as troublesome.
Could I possibly read this piece?
Of course. I have to say that I admire his style. It reflects very well on his education.
You're not offended?
I enjoyed his eloquence better than the usual heavy-handedness.
That very week, Father Jacobus addressed a brief letter to the Directorate of the Castalian Order, agreeing to support their approach to Rome. Josef duly received notification that as he had completed his assignment, he could return to Balzo.
Josef, you are welcome to stay, but I think you must return. I hope you will take with you the fruits of our conversations.
I will carry your wisdom with me for the rest of my life, Father.
My wisdom, indeed. I hope some of it will be useful. I am an old man and somewhat experienced. You have succeeded in your mission, but remember, Josef, to keep a close eye on relations between Castalia and the outside world. They are changing.
I will. Goodbye.
Study the Reformation and Schism of the 16th century.
Goodbye.
And have no truck with any philosophy of history.
Spring came to Balzo, and it was time for the Ludus Solemnis, the great public glass bead game. Josef arrived a few days beforehand and was summoned to the Magister Ludi's office to report on his time at Mariafels. To his surprise, he was met not by the Magister, but his assistant, or shadow, Bertram.
Oh, it's you, Knecht. No point, I'm afraid. The Magister is unwell, and I don't know enough about your assignment to receive your report. Go and see Hersland at the Directorate and await instructions.
Oh, very well. I'm sorry to have imposed on you at a difficult time.
Forgive me if I've disappointed you, but please understand that the Magister is really quite seriously ill. The game's upon us. Everything is up in the air. I just don't know if you'll be able to conduct proceedings or if I'll have to leap into the breach. And there's no time to prepare myself for such a role. No time at all.
Josef reported the news to Fritz.
I felt sorry for him.
For Bertram?
He's a good sort and talented, in a way.
We all find him rather annoying. He's so fussy and old-fashioned.
He does his job well, but I'm not sure he's up to this. Even if he were, it's an impossible situation.
What news of the Magister? His illness must be serious if Bertram's in such a state.
I'm sure it is, but I can't really imagine the game without him.
It's even harder to imagine the game under Bertram.
The announcement that the Magister Ludi was seriously ill and will be unable to oversee proceedings was delayed until the day before the game.
This is ridiculous. Bertram should have taken decisive action days ago.
He isn't free to act, remember? He has to follow the Magister's wishes.
Bertram was indeed in an impossible situation. Guests poured into Valsil, some unaware of the Magister's absence, others deeply worried. They gathered and settled for the preliminary meditation. And then Bertram, wearing the Magister's festival robes and exhibiting considerable control, although looking extremely pale, initiated the first movement of the game. Over the days that followed, Bertram looked increasingly strained.
They say Magister Thomas is close to death.
His shadow looks terrible. Those robes do not sit well on such a slight man.
He is showing such poor judgment. No wonder the third movement unraveled like that.
No wonder the integration took so long.
No wonder the resolution took such awkward shape.
Have you heard, Joseph? Bertram's falling apart. Lucas said that he'd been told...
Shh. I don't want to hear any of that nonsense. I'm here to watch the game.
It's the shadow's fault. The most disastrous game in memory and all his fault.
Magister Thomas has spoken from his deathbed. He says the game must continue.
He has named his successor.
It won't be Bertram.
It never is the shadow.
He's a disaster.
This is a disaster.
Who will it be?
I heard it was.
Surely not.
What about...
I can't stand this. They're so unfair. He played his part as best he could. More than that, he sacrificed himself by taking on a task he knew to be impossible. Why is everyone so harsh, so cruel?
You've been away a long time, Josef. You're thinking like someone who doesn't belong, or you'd understand that it was a sacrifice that needed to be made. Bertram knew that.
After the dismal conclusion of the game, Bertram slipped away.
What's happened to Bertram? He didn't stay to receive the guests of the board.
I believe he has to be given immediate leave and is taking a walking trip in the mountains.
A walking trip?
Bertram did not return from his trip to the mountains. After a while, a story went round that he had fallen to his death from a cliff. The matter was discussed no further.
Who will it be? Have you noticed the directors are all here?
The Civil Service High Committee too. All here.
They summoned Connect. Josef Connect.
Yes, several times.
But he's only 40, isn't he? Far too young.
But the last Magister was appointed at 45.
Who summoned Connect?
The President called him in.
And then the Master of Philology.
Shh, pipe down. Connect is coming along the path.
Doesn't he look haughty?
Always above himself, that one.
Be quiet.
Never really one of us.
But I should have known. I should have guessed it. After all, it was perfectly probable. Should I be glad? No, I am glad. Are you glad? Oh, Joseph, I'm beside myself.
Slow down. What's this all about?
It's likely, but more than likely, that you'll be elected Magister Ludi. You, Master of the Glass Bead Game. There were three candidates, you see. I heard the Master of the Archives talking about it. Two were called in. They've been eliminated. All three had support among the Magisters, but you've got the President behind you. And not to mention the old Music Master. His vote very much still
Wait,
counts.
Slow down.
It's going to be you. Joseph, what is it? What's the matter?
Joseph realized he had known this all along. He was going to become Magister Ludi, the master of the games. It was the highest possible achievement, and yet one about which he had not really been given any choice. He was on the point of sacrificing himself, and appeared to Fritz to look proud and exalted. Yes,
but also lonely and resigned. What Fritz did not yet know was that Josef had never stopped questioning the system that had swept him so quickly and smoothly to such greatness, and that the closer he got to its center, the more those doubts would grow.
The biographer was played by Derek Jacobi, Josef Knecht by Tom Ferguson, and the music master by Malcolm Raben. Van der Trave was played by Terence Mann, Plinio by David Seddon, Fritz by Toby Haydock, Bertram by Jonathan Keeble, and Father Jacobus by David Fleischman. Young Josef was played by Aidan Parsons. The Glass Bead Game was written by Hermann Hesse, dramatised by Lavinia Greenlaw, and directed in Manchester by Susan Roberts.
And the second part of The Glass Bead Game is at the same time next week.
You're leaving the seventh dimension.
That's it for today. Tomorrow we have the first part of our adaptation of Wally K. Daly's Before the Screaming Begins, and Martin Jarvis reads Washington Irving's The Legend of Sleepy Hollow. What a treat. See you then. I'm Andrew O'Neill, and I bid you good night.
Hello, it's Alan Smith here with some great late night listening from BBC Radio 4 Extra.
BBC Radio 4 Extra.
It's 1 o'clock and welcome if you've just joined us. It's Alan Smith with you through the night here on 4 Extra. And we're about to hear Dennis Potter's Desert Island Discs, that's next. Then we've a short story from the Zimbabwean writer Patina Gappa, which is centred on a coffin maker who enjoys some unexpected celebrity. The Mpandwana dancing champion is at 1:45. Now it's Desert Island Discs Revisited. With series like Pennies from Heaven and The Singing Detective, the writer Dennis Potter assumed a dominant role in British television drama. In conversation with Michael Parkinson now, he reveals a reclusive temperament and how he would actually enjoy a period of loneliness on a desert island with just 8 records, a book and his luxury item.
In any self-respecting history of drama on British television, our castaway would emerge as the dominant figure. From the very beginning in the 60s when he wrote Vote, Vote, Vote for Nigel Barton, through the 70s with Blue Remembered Hills and Pennies from Heaven, to the present and The Singing Detective, he showed himself to be a writer of unique imagination and originality. Here's Dennis Potter. Dennis, would you welcome this solitary life, do you think, on the desert island?
Probably, up to a point. I do have a very reclusive temperament, which occasionally bursts out. You know, reclusiveness and shyness are not the same thing, fortunately, but I like, I always have liked being on my own for long periods. It's sometimes difficult to arrange in marriage and things, but the concept of being on my own is attractive to me.
And are you a practical man? I mean,
No, afraid not. No. But then there wouldn't be a file of fax there, would there? And there wouldn't be a sort of ring circuit. I wouldn't have to change plugs and things. I'd just sit under a tree and contemplate my forthcoming death.
And how much of a solace would music be in this situation? Indeed, I mean, has music been a solace in your life or an inspiration in your life?
Yeah, a solace and an inspiration, but you know, particular kinds of music. It can be a chariot, you know, it can take you. You can fly with music, and particularly in if you're writing a play or something, you can use music on the edge of words, on the edge of the character's mind. And you know that other people are sharing, if not exactly the same emotion, a roughly similar one. It can be, no matter how sugary, syncopated, banal or cheap, it can be extraordinarily powerful.
Then what's about the first choice of record then? What does that remind you of, or what emotion does that provoke?
Basically, I suppose half malicious one. I'm choosing Tommy Dorsey Band's version of I'm Getting Sentimental Over You. And I'm choosing it partly for a sentimental reason, in that it was recorded 1935, year of my birth. And it's something I've heard on and off, on and off, almost sometimes at the corner of your mind. Sometimes when I'm ill, I play it. I threaten people that I want to play it at my funeral. Because the one thing about dying is if only you could observe their reactions, and I want them to think, oh, you know, and start crying. You know, they won't. They'll probably start laughing. But it's that mixture of false emotion and real emotion that this very popular piece conveys. Mm-hmm.